Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC Acra. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You've tuned into the WGXC local news update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Acra. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union that the town of Catskill has taken legal action against the now-shuttered Friar Tuck Inn over alleged code violations. The 200-acre resort has been vacant for a decade, but last month it was the scene of paramilitary maneuvers, with people toting replica AK-47s and using simulated explosive blasts, according to the town. In addition to the war games, there have also been reports of weekend gambling excursions and allegations that a bear was shot on the property. The facility was purchased in September for $5.8 million by New York City real estate investor Elena Fu. Fu's representative at the time said they planned to develop a mindfulness resort with a spa, horseback riding, hunting and fishing, cross-country skiing, and possibly a water park. The plan also called for opening 120 rooms by March. In the town's complaint, filed April 22nd in state Supreme Court, Greene County town lawyer Ted Hilscher said about the alleged war games, quote, on March 13th, 2021, paramilitary maneuvers were observed taking place at said buildings and lands, unquote, it reads. Quote, said maneuvers involved individuals in camouflage fatigues enacting battle scenes with what apparently are fake AK-47s and using grenades with realistic explosive discharges. They were seen occupying the buildings owned by NY32 Realty Group Incorporated, which have no certificate of occupancy and are the site of asbestos, unquote. Town officials are asking for an injunction to stop what the website Military Simulation and Tactical Operations advertised as, quote, a Catskill Crusade, unquote, a war games event scheduled for April 30th through May 2nd, for up to 500 participants. The complaint also alleges the facility has been without an approved sewage discharge permit for a decade and is near the wetlands that feed the Catterskill Creek. The facility does not have a special use permit for the military maneuvers, according to the complaint, and the town is seeking an order stopping all activity at the resort until the appropriate permits have been issued and potential fines for violations have been paid. The Friar Tuck Inn was opened in the 1970s by New York City restaurateur Salvatore Rick Carriti. It has a long history, being one of the larger and more elaborate resorts in the area. It is located on State Route 32, several miles outside of the Catskill Village and south of Cairo. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that administrative personnel from the Greene County Sheriff's Office moved into the new county jail in Coxsackie last week. Sheriff's Office moved to temporary quarters on Mansion Street in Coxsackie in February 2019, where it has remained until now. The county anticipates it will begin to house people at the new facility starting in July. As of April 23rd, the county had 37 people in custody, two women and 35 men, County Sheriff Pete Kosminski said. The new facility will have 16 cells for women and 48 for men. The State Commission of Correction also requires that 10% of the cells remain open. The new building is designed for direct supervision, where up to 32 people can be monitored by one corrections officer at a post within the pod equipped with security footage, Kosminski said. The 5,600-square-foot garage contains a bay specifically intended for storing vehicular evidence, the first evidence storage of its kind in the county, he said. Sheriff's Department's smaller boats, UTVs, and other equipment will also be stored in that space. The garage also contains a training room for defensive or lecture-based training, and the sheriff's office will start processing pistol permits at the new building on April 26th, Kosminski said. There are several multi-purpose rooms in the jail where individuals will be able to earn a GED, work on resume writing, and see counselors or clergy members. The Reverend Richard Turpin of Catskill's Second Baptist Church will be one of the clergy members available. Until the new facility opens, the people detained by Greene County are being housed at the Albany, Ulster, and Columbia County jails. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Capital Tonight is reporting that for the second year in a row, the New York State Senate has approved legislation addressing ghost guns, while similar measures have been neglected in the state assembly. So-called ghost guns have no serial numbers and are untraceable, can be manufactured using 3D printers, and are frequently purchased as kits on the internet. A typical kit might include 80% of what someone needs to build a working gun. Because only certain elements of a gun are included in a kit, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives does not classify it as a firearm. State Assembly person Linda Rosenthal, who sponsors a bill criminalizing ghost guns, said she is confident about her bill's future. Asked why ghost gun bills have been approved by the Senate but not the Assembly, Rosenthal said, quote, "With COVID and the whole pandemic last year, there wasn't an opportunity, at least in the Assembly, to pass it. I'm confident that we'll get this done," unquote. Rosenthal's bill criminalizes the possession of guns without serial numbers by anyone other than a licensed gunsmith, prohibits the sale of ghost guns entirely, and requires anyone manufacturing or assembling a firearm in New York to be a licensed gunsmith. It also requires gunsmiths in the state to serialize any firearms, rifles, shotguns, and unfinished firearm frames. Gun rights advocates, including the NRA, deny that criminals have any interest in purchasing or the time to order and then assemble ghost guns. The ATF reported that approximately 10,000 ghost guns were recovered nationwide in 2019. Read more about this story at nystateofpolitics.com, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday there should be showers in the morning, mainly before 2 p.m., then mostly cloudy skies with a high of 58, a low around 32. Monday should be sunny with a high of 51 and a low around 32, and Tuesday should also be mostly sunny with a high near 67 and a low around 49. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Monday, April 26th on WGXC 90.7 FM, including at 7 a.m. on the All Together Now show. We hear from Richard Rifkin, who's member of the Albany County League of Women Voters, and he discusses how New York will change its congressional districts after the census information is released later this year and how that will affect local voters. At 10 a.m. on the WGXC morning show, Rob Gellis talks with Gretchen Maresco, the registrar of the Hendrick Hudson Daughters of the American Revolution group, about local genealogical research and more on his Rob Around the County segment. At 11 a.m., it's time for the April Full Moon and the Radio Witch Moon Hotline show from Jess Spear. After the local news at noon on the Deep Three shows, hear local musicians John Medeski from Ulster County and Bobby Previtt from Columbia County on the radio. At 2 p.m., there's brand new music from the Vital Weekly show from Derek Poitra, Vertinen, and Joda Clement. At 3 p.m., Zena Parkins is the featured artist on Roulette Intermedium's Tracking the Odds show. And Rob Van Erve has Everything All the Time at 8 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alex Benson of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I am from Hudson.
And my name is Mashuda. I am 18 years old.
I'm 15, and I'm also from Hudson, and I'm 7 years old.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate. Bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do today. Hooray. So why don't we start off with Mashuda?
I'm going to share a poem today. So this is the poem by Emily Dickinson. As you know, she's one of the very famous poet in America. So hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and signs the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heart. And sore must be the storm that could abash the light bird that kept so many worn. I have heard it in the chillest land and the strangest sea. Yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. Emily Dickinson. Yeah, so that's the poem.
What made you choose that poem?
In college, like, we were doing an assignment where, like, we have to choose a quote that speaks to us. And I chose, like, I was just researching my quote. And so, like, we have to do a metaphor. And, like, I came up with this poem. Like, the metaphor is, like, hope is a thing with feathers. So, like, feathers is the metaphor of hope. Like, hope is, like, a delicate. So, like, and then I had to research, like, why the poet Emily Dickinson. And then, like, she wrote this poem because, like, in a sense that she's hoping her lover to love her, and it never happens. And so, like, even though she's a really good poet, like, it was interesting that she never, like, had, you know, a happy life. So all of her poems reflect what's, like, the events that happening in her lives. So it's like, when I first read it, I was just like, oh, it's hope. It's about, but, like, when I actually researched her, I understood the deep meaning in that poem. And I don't know if I should say the meaning because, like, I don't want to spoil it for the readers. So it's like, one of the don't judge a book by its cover, I judged that poem first. I was like, okay, that's hope. But then it was a requirement that I have to research the poet or the author or an activist, and I researched that author, and it was just like, it was a whole different meaning to it, and yeah, it was really interesting, and I love her more now as a poet, because, like, that's, and it's, it has a very deep meaning to it, so yeah.
It's a really, really nice book, sis.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for sharing. I'm wondering, Lena and Fatia, do you have a favorite poem or favorite poet?
Yes, I do. It's the rain, rain, go away, come on back another day. Little angel wants to play that.
I don't think I've ever heard the angel part.
But I did. It's like an assignment that my, like, teacher gave me.
That's nice. Yeah, I know rain, rain, go away, come again another day. But I didn't know the next part.
But I did.
You're so
wise. Rain, rain, go away, little angel wants to play. It's a really fun poem.
How about you, Lena?
I don't really think that there's a poem that, like, I like enough. Or now that I think about it, I haven't read many poems.
There are definitely times in my life where I didn't read much poetry. And then there are times when I read a lot. I've been trying to read more in recent years. Like I try to read a couple collections of poems every year. And then I also like reading them online. I like poets.org, the Academy of American Poets, I believe it is. They do a poem a day thing where you can subscribe and get them sent to your inbox. And I don't actually do that, but they also post at least one poem a day on their social media channels. And I often read those because they're nice and short. And it's a fun way to learn about different poets. And actually one of my favorite poets I learned about through that site, which is Ada Limón. I share her poems on the radio sometimes. So who else has something they want to share? How about Fatia?
I have a book to share. It's called You Have to Fast for 30 Days.
That's great. So this is one of your homemade books. It looks really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And is it about Ramadan?
Not exactly all. Like, I just put the cover there so it can be a little bit interesting. And this is the other page.
Pretty. So it has a house and a flower and a tree and a sun and a cloud.
And this page is a really rainbowy flower and a rainbow. And it has a house.
Those are some beautiful colors. Was that with watercolor?
No, it's like up the paint.
Yeah, is it a watercolor paint where you dip water?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell from it's very pretty.
Exactly the same paint that you gave to me.
Oh, it's from the library giveaway bags? Yeah, for all our listeners out there, every month we make some early literacy bags that have different activities and crafts and books for little kids.
Like, Mrs. Emily, I'm going to make one of the most best books and send them to the library after the virus.
Oh, that's nice. We'll look forward to that.
It's going to be a package, and it's going to be, like, full of, like, a little bit yummy treats.
Ooh.
I'm not going to tell you the treats because I don't want to spoil it. And this is a really beautiful picture. There's so many things in it, too.
Yeah. So this is a book of, like, landscapes with houses and rainbows and trees and flowers.
And next time we have radio, I have another book that is, like, a little bit, only 3 pages. It's actually thousands of pages. The other book has thousands of pages and more pages.
Do you know what I think would be a cool book for you to do?
Because
you love colors. I think it would be cool for you to do a book where you have a rainbow page, and then you have a page for each color of the rainbow. So you have like a red page, an orange page, so on.
That's a really good idea.
I think you would be really good at that. It'd be very interesting.
I'm gonna like put a little bit of paint there, the dots, and then I'm gonna like, yeah. And it's gonna be so cool.
Yeah, that'd be a cool book for little kids too that are learning their colors.
Mm-hmm. Little kids that are babies, like I have an idea. I can make a book for my brother, my baby brother.
That'd be nice. I bet he'd appreciate it.
I'm going to put a little surprise in. I'm going to pretend that I went shopping because me and my baby brother love playing shopping together.
Oh, that's very nice.
This is the last page, and then it's the end. Just to let you know, this is page 6. Before the radio started, I just wrote it quickly because I forgot to. Oh, yeah. And I forgot to, like put a poet here, a poet. Make a like hole and put a poet there.
One of your poems?
No, I think I should put one of my poems here, and then I can like put a poet, like I forgot what it's actually really called.
What is it though? Can you describe it?
It's something like that has someone's picture in it.
Oh, a bio, like an author bio?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, that way people will know it's your book and a little bit about you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to put a poem there. Well, one of my most beautiful poems.
I have another book idea for you. So you wrote a beautiful poem that you shared last week. And what if you made a book to go with that poem? So the different lines of the poem could be accompanied by different illustrations.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I have lots of great ideas.
I'm going to make it into a really beautiful book. And I'm going to start writing my poem. Really. I just love writing poems so much. It's so fun.
Nice. I'm glad you're enjoying that.
I love writing poems. It's so much fun.
Nice. Well, thank you for sharing your picture book. So, Lena, do you have something to share today?
Yes. Yesterday, I was reading Percy Jackson again because yesterday, I had the New York State testing ELA test. And wait, what?
You said fun fact.
Yeah, it wasn't that fun.
Super fun.
It wasn't that fun because we had to like sit down, do a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like a lot of the stories.
That's too bad. But anyways, how does that connect with Percy Jackson?
So when we're done, we're allowed to like draw, go to sleep, go on our computers, read if we want. And so I just said, I want to read Percy Jackson. And I read Percy Jackson again. And so I'm not that far. So I'm just going to read the book description. Percy Jackson is about to be kicked out of boarding school again. Mythological monsters and Percy's Greek mythology textbook. And into his life, and at worst, he's angered a few of them. Zeus's master lightning bolt has been stolen, and Percy is the prime suspect. Now Percy and his friends have just 10 days to find and return Zeus's stolen property and bring peace to a warring Mount Olympus. But to succeed in his quest, Percy will have to do more than catch the true thief. He must come to terms with the father who abandoned him, solve the riddle of the oracle, which warns him of betrayal by a friend, and unravel a treachery more powerful than the gods themselves.
Are you enjoying it as much on the second time as you did the first time?
Yes.
Is anything about reading it different? Like, do you have a different experience reading it the second time? Like finding yourself drawn to different characters or experiencing it differently?
Reading it the second time, some of the stuff kind of makes sense. Like in one of the first few pages, it mentioned that Percy has like dyslexia, ADHD, and ADD. And I remember first, I didn't know what ADD was, but even though it was explained, but I guess I wasn't paying attention to that part. But now I know what ADD is. Also, my sister helped me find out what ADD was.
I've still never read that series, which is strange because I've had so many radio co-hosts that loved it. I'm curious if I would like it as much. I feel like I hear from a lot of teens that really like it, tweens and teens that really like those books, but I haven't heard from as many adult readers that loved it. Whereas series like Harry Potter, I feel like there's a pretty big adult fan base for that. And I read all of those as an adult. But I think that's also an interesting thing with rereading some of those big series. Like my nephew finished the Harry Potter series, I think maybe a year or two ago, and he's a tween. I wonder if he'll ever read it as a teen and like have a different experience because he's more the age of the characters, or at least in the later books. I forget how old they are when they start, but I'm sure it's a different experience depending on what age you are when you read them.
Emily, I'm pretty sure like for the teenagers, like the teens and tweens are more like attracted to the movies instead of the books, I believe, because you get to like see the characters like if they were like more realistic. And I'm pretty sure it's just really popular over like with the subject of Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're enjoying that and your new dog. How's your new dog doing?
I don't know, because my sister stole my dog and brought it to her college.
No.
Yeah, no, she's thinking of coming back Saturday.
Okay, so it's just a week away at college.
Oh, no, it might be one more week away.
Okay, so it's like spring break for dogs in reverse.
Yeah, they're like, the thing is that it takes like 3 weeks for the dog to get used to the family or get used to the, like trying to get used to the family and their surroundings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. Hope you get to see your dog again soon.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I have a book I wanted to share that I read recently. I don't think I've talked about this on the radio. It was a really good book. It's called The Comic Book Guide to Growing Food, Step-by-Step Vegetable Gardening for Everyone. And it's by Joseph Tikhonovich and Liz Kozik did the illustrations. And so it's a graphic novel. I would say it's geared towards adults, but I think if you were a teen or tween that was really excited about gardening, that you would also be into this book. Because it basically walks you through how to grow a vegetable garden from like planning and prepping to planting, troubleshooting, harvesting. So it makes it through the whole cycle. And it does it through a frame story of two neighbors, one who's a young woman who is in some kind of technology field or technology-based field, but she's like really good with technology. And then her neighbor who's retired and has a beautiful garden in his yard. And he, one day they connect because he's frustrated with his technology and she's admiring his garden. And so they sort of decide to team up and she'll help him get more comfortable with technology and he'll help her learn how to grow vegetables on her yard. And it's just a really nice way of laying out the information because it goes through the season and sort of talks about different sort of both like cheat sheets and like kind of ideas. He keeps doing this thing, which is sort of a joke throughout the book where he's like, the number one rule of gardening is blank. But he says that like several times throughout the book. And so she's always like, really, the number one rule? But you said the number one rule was that. And he's like, well, this one's also the number one rule. But like, I think I can probably relate to her when I first started gardening that my dreams are much bigger than my capabilities or even my yard. So it's very easy to want to do a lot, but it suggests to start small. So, you know, start with like one garden plot. And then if you feel like you have room to expand, your capacity is enough that you can expand, then you can add another one or do some container gardening. But yeah, I found it like a really useful resource. I'm definitely buying a copy of this book that I can keep at home because it has a lot of interesting information and it's really accessible. And the like frame story makes it fun. So it's not just reading a book on gardening. It's reading a story about someone learning how to garden. But yeah, so that's The Comic Book Guide to Growing Food, Step-by-Step Vegetable Gardening for Everyone. And we have a copy of this at the library. There's some other copies in the system. We're also part of a pilot project this year at the Hudson Area Library called the Library of Local, where we're working with a group called Lifeboats HV and an organization called Dirty Gaia and the Mid-Hudson Library System, as well as our, I call them sister libraries. They could be brother libraries too. Sibling libraries, Kingston, the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville, and the Morton Memorial Library in Rhinecliff, New York. And so the four of our libraries are all organizing a series of programs throughout the year focused on gardening and foraging and sort of sustainability around food and local food production. And then we also have these kiosks that we're developing in the libraries that have books about those topics for various ages. And we also have some seeds that people can come and pick up. So if people want to try starting either flowers or vegetables from seed this year, you can pick up some seeds at the library. We have a little selection of nice seeds.
Seeds?
Yeah, yeah. Seeds. Mm-hmm. So we have tomatoes and beans and lettuce and nasturtium, which is a really pretty flower that you can also eat. So it's fun to put in salads. And cucumber and zucchini. Those are just the ones that are coming to my head right now. But I know we're going to add some more. And then we also want to have a way for if people like buy seeds, like I just went wild and bought a lot of seeds and they won't all fit in my yard. And so rather than them go to waste, I could donate the rest of my seeds so that other people could come and pick them up. And then we also are going to have some tools that people can borrow. So if you want to get started in gardening, but you don't have the proper equipment to do so, before you invest in buying like different kinds of hoes and rakes and gardening tools like that, you could borrow one from the library and try it out. But yeah, so if you want some seeds, give us a call and let us know. We can pack some up for you, or you can stop by and get some.
That story is amazing.
Yeah, I think it'll be really fun. I don't often grow from seed. I often buy seedlings from garden stores or from the farmer's market. But I'm going to try doing some from seed this year. I have done flowers from seed before, and it is really fun to like plant a bunch of seeds and then you start to see the little seedlings come up. Do you all ever do any gardening?
I never did gardening before, but one time I got a seed from my teacher, Mrs. Moses. And then she gave me like a seed to press, like of like a lettuce and grass. But I never tried it before. I gave it to my mom, and one time we tried it out, and it was so yummy. It was so delicious. And also excited to planted, like that we didn't even have a shovel, so that's why we just like used our hands instead to dig a little bit.
Well, so now you might be able to borrow some equipment from the library. Maybe that'll make it easier.
And I also like water the plant every day, and then like a couple weeks later and months later it like grew so much. It was like a little bit like this tall, and then like I picked some and I like put them in the basket and I gave them to my mom, and then she washed them, then cut them, then she made it into a delicious style salad.
Nice. How about you, Lena? Do you ever do any gardening or growing?
I don't really do any gardening or growing.
Yeah, I've actually been having a lot of fun this year and in recent years with gardening. But this year, one thing I'm having a lot of fun with is I've been trying to grow food from food scraps. So you can take things like celery that has the base. So you can't do it if they've cut it already. But if it has like the base part that would be in the ground, you can sort of, when you cut off the top part of the celery, you can put that in a little bit of water and it'll eventually grow roots. And you'll see like part of the celery starts growing out of the top. And then eventually you could plant it and get a whole new celery out of it. So I've been doing that with celery and romaine and scallion so far. And I've done a little bit with a potato, but that one I didn't get in the ground soon enough. So eventually it just became a plant. And then eventually I composted it. But it's really fun to see them grow out of a little scrap. Oh, and I'm trying it with an avocado pit too, because apparently you can get a pretty cool plant from that. I don't think it'll actually give me any avocados, but it could be a neat plant to have. But I want to learn more about that. So I'm just kind of winging it right now.
Did you guys ever make pizza by yourself? But my brother made pizza by himself. It was so delicious.
Oh, nice.
And I had 39 pieces.
That's a lot of pizza.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a really big pizza.
Well, one of the fun gardening activities that people can do is to make a pizza garden. So you obviously don't grow the dough, but you can grow tomatoes and basil and maybe peppers or something, whatever you like to put on your pizza. And then you can have some fresh tomato and basil.
How do you even grow dough? We can't But we can make dough with flour and water mixing together.
Like yes, that. he wouldn't grow the dough.
I wouldn't even grow the dough. You know? Like, if you put dirt and in some flour.
Yeah. I guess if you lived on a farm, you could grow wheat and make flour.
Yeah.
But most people don't live on a farm. Yeah, making pizza is fun.
Like, I really wanted to help my brother make pizza, but one time I finally did, and I did everything. I, like, put it in the oven, and I turned it on. Like, first was cheese pizza, my favorite pizza, and I put, like, some tomato sauce, then I put some cheese in there, tomato sauce and cheese, then I put it in the oven, and I asked my brother, like, what number should I do? And then my brother did it because I didn't even know what to do that back then. And then after it was done cooking, I turned it off and then I bring it out. Then it was too dangerous for me. Like, me and my brother cut it together.
Nice.
And then the first bite that I tasted was so good. And I, like, took a lot of slices, 39 slices. I couldn't help it. The pizza was so delicious.
Well, on that note, now that we're all really hungry for some pizza or some fresh produce from the garden, we're out of time for today. But we're glad you all were listening. And we'll be back next week to talk about some more books. So we hope everyone has a great week with lots of quality reading time. Until next week, happy reading.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. Natasha Vaughn reports for Columbia Green Media that 16 and 17-year-olds in Columbia County will begin receiving Pfizer vaccines for COVID-19 beginning this week. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said April 22nd, quote, "I got the word last evening that we're going to be getting it this coming week," unquote. Greene and Warren counties are sharing a tray of the Pfizer vaccine with 1,170 doses with Columbia County. Quote, we were told all the Pfizer was being diverted to the FEMA sites, unquote, said Mab, quote, which doesn't set well with most of us because all the FEMA sites are set up in large metropolitan areas. And what about us? It was a little upsetting for me, too, that Albany County got 3,500 doses of it last week and another 3,500 doses this week, unquote. But this week, Columbia and Greene counties are getting the Pfizer doses, the only vaccine so far approved for 16 and 17-year-olds. Mab said schools have been sending home permission slips to the almost 1,000 county students who are old enough to receive the vaccine. Quote, so far, among the six school districts, only about 150 students have expressed an interest, unquote, Mab said. Quote, that's disappointing, but I think once we say we've got it and we're going to be showing up on this date at this time, I think the number will go up, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Steve Hughes and Eduardo Medina reported in the Times Union that protesters returned to the street in front of the Albany Police's South Station April 23rd, a day after police forcibly removed them with violence. Before that, protesters had camped out since an April 14th incident between police and protesters, where a window was broken and pepper spray was used on Americans. Brandon Brown, 21, said an officer hit his wrist on April 22nd with a baton and pulled his fingers so hard while in handcuffs he thought they were going to break. Quote, they were just really vicious and rough with me. You could tell they were letting out their anger, unquote, he said. Friday night things were calm. Between 12 and 20 police officers milled about the scene, and Albany Police spokesperson Officer Steve Smith said on April 23rd that, quote, we are monitoring the situation. There are no plans to clear the street this evening. We support their right to peacefully protest, and we ask that they don't damage any property, unquote. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan has refused to meet with the protesters and has vowed to veto a proposed ban on police use of tear gas that is before the Common Council. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that after a decade of showing movies in Woodstock, Upstate Films is leaving its Tinker Street Cinema. Quote, the Tinker Street Cinema was financially marginal during the past few years, unquote, Upstate's Jason Silverman said in an email April 23rd. Quote, attendance has dropped significantly, more than 35% since its height under our management. We anticipate the post-COVID attendance to decrease still more, unquote. Upstate Film's main location is Rhinebeck, with two screens shut down since the pandemic began, and they took over what would have been a closed theater in Woodstock in 2010. The organization, which shows mostly independent films, wrote in its newsletter that, quote, in the meantime, we pledge to continue to bring cinema to Woodstock through outdoor events and pop-ups and in collaboration with the Woodstock Film Festival, unquote. The Tinker Street Cinema in Woodstock was converted from a church in the 1960s, and Jimi Hendrix played on the stage in front of the screen in 1969 before the Woodstock Rock Festival. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Room is blue.
That was Jury's Out from Joshua Redman. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Saturday, April 17th, on the fifth-year anniversary of the killing of Edson Thevenin, activists in Troy gathered to honor him and Black life. In an event organized by Troy for Black Lives and Reimagine Troy, the day started with an altar building and honoring of ancestors.
Call on them. Say their names. Call them into the space. This is what this moment demands.
Luce Marquez Benbow from Troy for Black Lives kicked off the event.
The police department in this city lynched a man, a person, a father. His name is Edson Thevenin. And today is his fifth year anniversary. And to Edson, to Thaddeus Faison, who was killed in 2015, to Ashawn Sean, the 11-year-old who we lost last year, and to all the names of those known and unknown whose bodies have been taken from us by a government who approves it, a system that is okay with killing Black bodies. We also want to call and give honor to the many that some of you have the audacity to call gun violence, that some of you have the audacity to call street violence, that some of you actually freaking think that we don't care about when crime happens in our communities. We care, but we understand that to be a connection and a direct link to the over-policing of our communities. There is a war on crime, and who are the criminals that they think? Our Black bodies. Don't get confused. You want to stop gun violence? Then stop white supremacy. You want to stop guns in the streets? Defund the police.
That passionate plea to stand up for all Black lives was made by Luce Marquez Benbow, one of the MCs of the event and a member of Troy for Black Lives. April 17th not only marks the anniversary of the killing of Edson Thevenin by Troy police officer Randall French, but it is also Edson Thevenin's brother's birthday. And therefore, his mother, Gertha Deepas, could not attend the rally, but she did send a statement. It was read by the former president of the NAACP, Jessica Ashley.
Injustice to one is injustice to us all. My heart pains for every mother who has endured the pain that I have endured. My heart grieves for the children who will no longer know the comfort of a parent and the spouses whose support has been violently snatched from them. the unjustified killing of men and women in the black and brown communities by those who have sworn to protect and to serve is a crime to humanity and modern day genocide. A loss of life is a loss not only to the family, but to a loss to us all. And until this dysfunction is addressed, how can we expect for our children to have a better future? The Troy Police Department took the life of my son, attempting to rob us of the dignity of his life through false statements and propaganda while the officials presided over the sanction and miscarriage of justice for Edson. 5 years have not eased the pain. It has intensified the struggle. These are the words of a mother. She not only represents the one, but she represents every son, every daughter who has been assaulted, brutalized, murdered by the police, and sanctioned by a system that allows these crimes to continue. This is modern day lynching. The problem is that we allow it to happen. The power has always been in the hands of the people. It is only when the people cry out and stand up and say enough is enough, it is then that the changes take place. It is time for us to stop being told when we are to meet, how long we are to meet, and what we are to talk about. It is time for us to move and to be where we choose to be, to speak out where we need to speak out, be it City Hall, be it wherever it might be, in front of the Detroit Police Department, where the criminals are held up and continuing to violate the rights of the people in the city. Crime is crime. There is nothing in a law book that says that the police can commit crime and get away with it. We need to come out in numbers. We need to be seen continuously, and we need to be crying out daily, enough is enough. We cannot allow the mayor to rest. We cannot allow the chief of police to rest. We cannot allow any police in this city to rest until they understand this is our city and enough is enough.
That was Jessica Ashley, the former president of the Troy NAACP, speaking on Saturday at the Troy Rally for Black Life under the Collar City Bridge and in front of a banner that read Black Lives Matter and an altar of flowers celebrating Black life. Messiah Cooper, D'Meek McDonald's uncle, also spoke at the event. He lamented about waiting to be activated until police violence hit home.
We're here on the day that Edson Thevenin's life was taken. There was a public hanging on this day. But we are here because my nephew was shot. Because if my nephew wasn't shot, I wouldn't have acted. And I failed to act along with the community when they took Edson Thevenin's life. Right. It still hurts me.
Yeah.
I thought I stood for truth until I looked in the mirror at me and said, how could I allow them to take the life of a black man? And just because I didn't know him, I didn't stand for him.
Come on, bro.
When you stand for us or any black life that's been taken or been robbed of their liberties, do it because your heart tells you to do it.
Right.
Do it because if it was your baby, your husband, your son, your daughter, you wouldn't tolerate it.
Right. Right.
Do it because if you don't do it, you'll feel like me.
After Messiah Cooper of Troy for Black Lives spoke, Delilah Yeen took to the mic to tell her story about surviving police violence as a black immigrant.
I'm a mother, an activist, and an immigrant, and a black woman living in America. 2 years ago, I was arrested by Troy PD for doing a rolling stop through a stop sign. As a result of that arrest, I spent 3 months in an ICE detention facility. I was ripped away from my two minor children, and I spent upwards of a year fighting to stay in this country and in this city that I've been living in for 18 years, more than half of my life. My children were born here.